Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Monday Morning Politics, Local Edition. Mayor de Blasio and City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito are in Albany today, making their case for a tax on the wealthy to fund universal pre-K and middle school after school. We heard Mayor de Blasio live making some of that case a few minutes ago. With us now on that and more, Brooklyn City Councilman Brad Lander, a co-founder with Mark Viverito of the Progressive Caucus in the council, now ascendant with Mark Viverito's rise to speaker. Councilman Lander, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much, Brian. Good morning.
Now, between Cuomo's opposition to the city income tax for the top 1% and the state Senate leadership's opposition, this is an uphill climb for the mayor and the speaker in Albany this year. Will they just come home today weaker for the effort?
Oh, I don't think so. This is a campaign. You know, I think you could say the same when you looked at de Blasio's campaign for mayor or our new speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito's campaign for speaker. People would have said at the beginning, there's no way that's going to work. But if you come from experience in community organizing, you see something that's important, you believe the vast majority of people actually support it. Let's not forget that it's not just the expansion of universal pre-K, but New Yorkers believe in more progressive taxation. Then you organize to try to achieve it. And today, in many ways, is just an early step in a campaign to persuade our legislators in Albany, to persuade the governor that the people of New York, the people of New York City, to be sure, want the approach that the mayor and the speaker are proposing today.
But where's the path to victory on this in Albany? Clearly, you're right. We've seen the polls. We know the election results. But beyond that, the opinion polls on the particular issue, people in New York City do support this tax hike. But if the majority of the state Senate and the Republicans have enough control to prevail on this, and the governor himself in his reelection year, who has said in no uncertain terms that he's against allowing the city to have this tax hike, where's the path to victory?
Well, a few things. First, we still haven't seen anybody put on the table a different but steady, continuing, durable source of funding for pre-K. So the governor has said he'll find a way to pay for it. That might be fine this year or next year, but finding a way to make sure it really continues over time, people really understand that and expect to see that, and we haven't seen it.
But let me jump in on that, because the governor says 5 years of guaranteed funding out of the general operating funds of the state. Mayor de Blasio's proposal is only for 5 years for this tax hike on $500,000 plus earners to fund pre-K and after school. So what's the difference?
Well, first, if you do a high-income earner tax, you can see how it's going, and you could decide that it was appropriate to and needed to be renewed, or you could decide you had achieved what you needed to achieve in revenue. We don't know what the income for the state, what revenue for the state and the city are going to look like 5 years from now, but I'd rather be in a position of having established a revenue stream than having said, you know, we'll spend the seed corn. And the big question, and it isn't a very important part of the state budget debate, is what else is being cut to do that? Is it general education funding for our schools? Is it using the affordable housing money won by the Attorney General Schneiderman to pay for the housing programs for a while, but in a way that could lead to a long-term cut? So there's still some research to do here, and I think New Yorkers are smart enough, especially when they're clued in and their attention is called, to understanding what's important, to raise their voices. And I do hope that some of those folks in the Senate, especially the Independent Democratic Caucus, but also some Republican state senators, and I hope that the governor will be persuaded to change their minds. That's not easy, but it does sometimes happen as a result of good campaigning and politics.
Since the governor is offering all this money, what is it, $1.5 billion of state aid to make universal pre-K happen, and he promises it statewide, not just for the city, I don't remember a mayor ever arguing against a big new block of state aid. So why shouldn't the mayor and the council just take yes for an answer and come back another day on a tax hike?
Well, first, I'm not sure it is yes for an answer. And those questions about what's happening, you know, that for a long time, the state was providing several $100 million a year of state aid for education funding. And that's been dramatically cut over time. As you know, the campaign for fiscal equity lawsuit, the state hasn't come close to meeting its obligations under that. And we're not willing to say, fine, those things are off the table. We'll live with all the cuts to general education, all the cuts to classrooms, and you can put it into universal pre-K. We still expect those things to be provided. And there's just a bigger set of questions here. So,
and in the clip that we played, or actually the live coverage that we did a little earlier, I don't know if you were listening or watching also, when the mayor was testifying before the legislature, he brought that up, that campaign for fiscal equity lawsuit funding that the city had won in court, and saying, you know, that went down somewhat in the recession in the last few years. So give us the money that you're promising for pre-K for that, and then let us impose our tax at the city level.
And folks who have kids in the public schools have seen that. You know, I've got a fifth grader. She's in a class of 30. We want our, you know, the number of kids, of New York City public school kids in classes of 30 or more, my office did a study on this last year, has grown dramatically, double-digit percentage increases in the number of elementary school kids in classes of 30 or more, and nobody wants that. So we want the universal pre-K. That makes a huge, huge educational difference, brain development, economic success, on and on. But we also want to be able to get class size back down, and we aren't going to be able to do that unless there are those resources. Then you have the fact, as you stated, that the vast majority of New Yorkers agree that we've gone away from tax fairness in recent years. The percent of New York City's income that flows to the top 1% of earners has grown significantly, and their share of the tax burden has declined. Again, it's not just the point that we want tax fairness. It's that we want our schools to work, and we want pre-K, and we want to see the city be able to succeed over the long term for all its residents.
Brad Lander, my guest on WNYC, Brooklyn City Council member and a real leader in the city right now. He was a co-founder of the Progressive Caucus 4 years ago with Melissa Mark Viverito. They're very close. So with she in the speaker's chair, Brad Lander has a lot to say about running the city these days. And if you want to call and ask him a question, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or tell us if you think the city should take what Governor Cuomo says anyway is yes for an answer on pre-K funding and move on from there. 212-433-9692 to talk to Brad Lander. Before we go on to some other things, you know what I was thinking about the taxes? Why hasn't the city considered, or, you know, the mayor and you, considered raising property taxes on the most valuable 1% of real estate to get at, by and large, the same top 1% wealthiest? The city can do that on its own without Albany. It doesn't allow city billionaires to hide their income in Russia or Florida or wherever they can now. And property taxes in the city are relatively low.
Would that we could do that. What the city can do on its own is raise the property tax rate for all payers. And so we can't target a property tax to property owned by the wealthiest 1% or the most valuable 1% of property. All we can do is raise the property tax across the board. And, you know, that's a last resort. And sometimes in the deepest need, that's what has to be done. Mayor Bloomberg did it after 9/11. But our property tax isn't very progressive, and it's also got a lot of random inequities. So that co-op owners on Fifth Avenue don't pay that much, but condo owners of new buildings wind up paying a lot.
Right,
and
it would be
tax exemption.
Right,
so
I know, but
Albany would be required for any significant restructuring of the property tax to make it more progressive as well.
If you were going to target it to the 1% top of assessed valuation, something like that, you would need Albany for that.
Still requires Albany.
All right. Well, let me go on to some other issues. And one advantage of having the mayor and council unified on inequality is that, poof, 3 years of debate on paid sick leave, bottled up by Mayor Bloomberg and Speaker Quinn before a compromise last year in the heat of the campaign, has suddenly evaporated, and the new mayor and speaker announced an agreement before a bill is even introduced. Is this sailing through now to require paid sick leave for all businesses with five or more workers?
I think it will, and it was so exciting to see Speaker Mark Viverito and Mayor de Blasio standing together with the comptroller, Scott Stringer, and the public advocate, and dozens of city council members and groups like A Better Balance and Make the Road out in front of Esmeralda's, a restaurant in Bushwick that already provides paid sick days, even though it's a small business, Latino-owned. you know, this is a bill that the Speaker and I and Margaret Chin, who's the bill sponsor, and quite a few others had actually signed on to 4 years ago. Was a bill to do just this, businesses of five or more. I haven't looked in the last couple of days to see whether it's gotten passed, but I think a strong majority of city council members have already signed on as co-sponsors of the bill. As I say, many of us signed on to that 4 years ago, were eager to have seen it pass then. And I think we're going to have a hearing. We're going to listen to everyone come out and testify. We always consider amendments. We look at, we listen to all arguments. But I believe there's just real strong support in the council. And again, this is another where I think this one, something like 80% of New Yorkers agree. You find me one New Yorker who isn't hoping for their kids a job that at a minimum offers paid sick days. And I'll consider some of the alternatives, right. But businesses can afford it. It's a reasonable expectation.
I read that it would include days for family care for kids, parents, and grandparents who are sick. Is that not in the current law?
It is in the current law, but obviously if you don't have them. So, I think grandparents may be being added if it's – I have to go back and take a look. If you're a grandparent who, takes care of a kid – this would clarify that you're able to take that time if the kid is sick and you need to stay home from school with them.
Julie in Hastings, you're on WNYC. Hi, Julie. Julie, are you there? Nope, Julie got lost. All right. How about Ann in Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for letting me on your show. I really admire it. I have a four-year-old who would be in public pre-K if I thought public pre-K were healthier for four-year-old children, as in, allowed them to move, to develop physically, develop their social and emotional skills, and then just help them learn to self-regulate in a large group separated from their families, which is what I think is really important for four-year-olds. And I'm really curious about what Mayor de Blasio or Bradlander means by a quality pre-K program, what those characteristics would be, and if they would just be like reading prep and things like that, or if it would really focus on the developmental needs of pre-K children?
Yep. That's a great question, and it's definitely the latter. There is a great team of people that the mayor announced, that Jennifer Jones-Austen and Josh Wallach and Gil Ney, with real experts in early childhood development, are working together. So while there's a political campaign up in Albany to win the funding, there's work going on, and a little of it's been spelled out in a couple of articles today, but there's a lot more to come, about how to get a real high-quality program that learns from the best of what works in early childhood development. Some of that is brain development. A lot of that is socialization and health and getting kids ready. So there will be a plan to make sure that pre-K nurtures and prepares kids for all the things they need to be ready for. And look, that's really in sync with what the new chancellor, Carmen Farina, who I'm a District 15 public school parent in Brooklyn, so we've known of her great work for a long time. What she wants to be true of the public schools more broadly, and as she's talked about, as the mayor has, and as the speaker has, and as our new education chair, Danny Drum, in the council has, how we need to counter the over-reliance on high-stakes testing, not just because of the stress it causes or the imperfections in the system, but because we want a school system that nurtures our kids and prepares them for the lives they want to lead. And some of that is about being healthy, being able to work with others, creative problem-solving in teams, arts, music. So we want it for UPK, and we want it more broadly in our school.
One of the things, and Anne, thank you for your call, one of the things that the Times article on New Jersey's experience, and imagine New Jersey being a model for New York on something, but it seems like it is on pre-K in many ways. One of the differences that the article pointed out is that in New Jersey they actually require an early childhood degree for people who teach pre-K. In New York, currently, for the program that currently exists, there only has to be a stated intent to get such a degree in the next 5 years. Do you think if we're going to have universal pre-K in the city and it's going to be effective, that we need to up that standard?
I think a focus on elevating the quality of pre-K is absolutely going to be a part of expanding it as well. And obviously you have to pace that out. You want to use the expansion, get it available to more kids while you're also pushing higher educational standards. One challenge we have is a lot of pre-K in New York City is provided in the public schools. A lot of pre-K in New York City is provided by community-based organizations and others outside of the schools. But there are some great examples. I mentioned Josh Wallach before us at the Children's Aid Society. They've got, I think, 1,100 or 1,200 kids in pre-K outside of public schools around the city, and they've been running a great network that is not only expanding to offer it to more kids, but elevating the jobs. That's good for the workers as well, right? It's not only a demand that they get a certification. It moves them toward getting a job as teachers, helps mm-hmm. them make more money, have health care, be professionals.
So you may go there.
Yes. I think this has got to be figured out over time, but a focus on quality and the standards okay. that come with it is part of the pre-K focus.
And now I think we've got Julian Hastings. Julie, you're on WNYC with City Councilman Brad Lander. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call after I pushed the wrong button. My question is, we know that the majority of New York City residents are in favor of increasing a tax for the 1%. We know that the Republicans in Albany are against it. I'm wondering, New York State residents taken as a whole, you know, upstate, downstate, New York State residents as a whole, what do they think?
In your opinion, though, Julie, should it matter? I'm going to throw it back at you in that way, because this is a tax that would only apply to New York City residents making $500,000 a year or more. So should it matter what you in Hastings or somebody in Buffalo?
I would submit that it matters in the sense that the Republicans who oppose it, a lot of them aren't from New York City.
Just politically it matters. All right, Brad, real quick on this.
I think your question is the right one. I mean, if we're only, you know, there's a lot of ways in which New York City would like to have more ability to do the things that residents in New York City are looking for, whether that's the minimum wage, whether that's control over our rent regulation laws, and certainly whether that's control over our tax policy. So I think there is support for this amongst a broader set of New Yorkers beyond the city, but all we're asking for right now is for something that would affect residents.
She gives me an idea, though. It would be interesting to do a home rule public opinion poll statewide and ask people all over the state if a locality, a municipality in the state wants to raise taxes or change housing regulation or whatever, just within that particular locality, should the state legislature have the power to say yes or no? And maybe that would move the issue forward a little bit.
That's a great idea.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to touch a couple of other issues. One, you've been a big proponent of more transparency and more democracy in city council during Speaker Quinn's days. Now we have your ally as Speaker, and she doled out committee chairmanships last week in what's been reported as the same old way. People who supported her got the plum chairmanships with the power they bring and the extra stipends. Those who oppose her prominently were out in the cold. Is that reform?
Well, first, I don't think that's really accurate. The new speaker has built a very inclusive leadership team. I'm honored to be a part of it, but it includes Dan Gorodnick, who was her chief rival for speaker, who's got the same deputy leader title that I do. It includes Jimmy Vaca, who was another candidate for speaker from the Bronx. It includes Jumaane Williams, who was another candidate for speaker. There are people who were not part of her coalition, who didn't support her, who aren't in the Progressive Caucus, in positions of leadership on committees. So, and a lot of the people that she chose for committees really have great and exciting experience. So Carlos Menchaca, first Mexican-American in the councils, chairing the Immigration Committee. Richie Torres, great new Bronx council member, grew up in public housing, chairing the Public Housing Committee. Corey Johnson, openly HIV-positive member of the council, chairing the Health Committee. So I think the choices that she made were good. Now, look, you can't take the politics out of politics. And people who not only didn't support her, but have, made clear they're not going to help the council move forward under her leadership, it would be unusual to give them prominent committee chairmanships. And I can't think of any effective elected official that would do it. She is committed, and the Progressive Caucus and the council is committed to some significant rules reforms. We have committed to take the politics out of the member items or the discretionary funding. It's one thing to move the committee chairs around, but we don't believe that your position in the speaker's race or on a piece of legislation should affect whether a food pantry or a soup kitchen or a little league or a volunteer fire station in your district is able to get some of that discretionary funding.
So that discretionary funding, in other words, every district will get the same dollar figure.
So we're working on whether it's the same or whether in some areas it might be a needs-based formula. If there's funding for soup kitchens, you might do it by where there's the greatest hunger, but some mix of equal or needs-based with a formula that's disclosed in advance.
And will the new leadership follow through on what I think was your old position of wanting power more dispersed out of the speaker's hands, more ability for individual members and committees to bring things to a vote on the full council floor over the speaker's opposition? That was an issue with paid sick leave and Quinn, things like that. Or does your enthusiasm for that now wane when your bloc has the power?
So under Speaker Mark Viverito's leadership, and I'm honored to have been selected by her to chair the Rules Committee.
This is your bailiwick.
We are moving forward on those reforms, and we will be having a hearing next month in the council. Date's not set yet, but watch the calendar, where people can come and testify on what rules reforms are needed to make sure the council does follow through, is more transparent, more inclusive, more small-d democratic, and we will bring forward a proposal for rules reform to bring to the floor of the council that does exactly those things, that makes it more possible for members to advance legislation, that takes the politics out of the discretionary funding. We're going to work real hard to make sure there's a strategic, coherent agenda, and of course, the things that the speaker feels are a priority to push forward are going to get a lot of attention, as they should. But we are going to follow through on that set of rules reforms that we believe New Yorkers
and want. One final thing. Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year is this Friday. And here's what Speaker Mark Viverito said last week about future years. Make it a school holiday.
Students shouldn't feel like they have to choose between celebrating their heritage and missing a day of school.
Before that?
Yes, but I also want to see, first I would say that it's up to the chancellor and not up to the council what the school holidays are. I've been said in the past that I believe the Eid holidays, the two Muslim Eid holidays ought to be holidays. But I think we need to take a broader look at the school
calendar.
Right,
and I think that's the package, right? That in addition to the Christian and Jewish holidays now that close the schools, given the changing populations,
that's right.
The Lunar New Year to accommodate how many Asian families celebrate that, mostly Asian families, and the two Eids with the growing Muslim population.
Absolutely. And it's only right if you look at who's in the schools that the holidays that our kids celebrate be the ones that that our schools celebrate.
But it's not, even though she weighed in publicly, this is not a city council issue. I didn't realize that. This is just up to the school's chancellor.
That's right. We might do a resolution. We did a resolution in the last council in favor of the Eid holidays, but the charter provides that the school calendar is up to the chancellor and the mayor.
All right. You know what? We have 60 seconds. Let me throw in one more. With the quest for zero traffic deaths.
Absolutely.
And the rash of pedestrian deaths already this year, Assemblyman Daniel O'Donnell from the Upper West Side was here last week asking council to ask Albany for permission to establish 20 miles an hour as the citywide speed limit. Then if certain neighborhoods want it to be any more than that, they can raise it. But do you know about O'Donnell's proposal, and is council willing to ask Albany for that home rule message?
So first, I've been so encouraged by what forward progress there's been on Vision Zero and safer streets. I've been working on this for a long time, going back to the Prospect Park West bike lane. You've seen all this great work by Transportation Alternatives and Streets Blog. Great to see Mayor de Blasio pushing it forward with Vision Zero. We really need comprehensive action, lower speed limits, absolutely. So I do support asking Albany to enable New York City to implement lower speed limits, but it's got to go along with better enforcement and with better engineering and education. We've got a great new, great commanding officer in the 78th Precinct who's taken some exciting steps forward that we'll be announcing later today. He actually did last Thursday and Friday a sting operation for the drivers failing to yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. So we need a lot of steps forward, lower speed limits, better and more thoughtful enforcement, and continued work on engineering. And the path toward Vision Zero and the mayor's announcement and the people may have seen in the Times over the weekend, very moving story on the parents of Sammy Cohen Eckstein, a 12-year-old constituent of mine who was killed on Prospect Park West a few weeks ago.
And we can put that in the statewide poll. If a city wants to establish a speed limit for its local roads, should the state, the entire state, have the decision over whether that locality can establish
Absolutely.
The speed limit?
Absolutely, or letting us have the speed cameras that we need to enforce it also.
City Council Progressive Caucus co-chair Brad Lander from Brooklyn, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Coming up after the news on The Brian Lehrer Show, we have Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop, who has some company in town both Super Bowl teams arrived yesterday for a week-long stay in Jersey City's finest hotels. No Airbnb for them. We'll talk to Mayor Fulop about being the Super Bowl's bedroom community and his changing tune about Governor Christie since Bridgegate.